5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
That afternoon, the downtown traffic splashed through rain puddles on the street, spritzing me as I rushed towards the psychic studio on Main Street in Bloom. The psychic's shop blazed on the corner in neon glory, illuminating the street with impossible shades of red. Bells chimed as I entered. Inside, red sequin disco lights, the size of pumpkins, swung from the chipped ceiling, emanating a pinkish glow into the closet-sized space. To the right, a burgundy velvet curtain separated the waiting area from the psychic's chambers, clashing with the faded red shag carpet that looked like it had been stripped from the floors of a condemned motel circa 1970. Oh God, I thought, am I really doing this? A small voice interrupted my reverie.
May I help you, sir?
He said, his voice thick with an accent I couldn't trace. I smiled, buttoning my umbrella shut. I dried my hands on my coat and nodded.
Yeah, I said. I want to make an appointment with...
I pulled out my phone and then scrolled down to the contact that Josh had sent me when he insisted that I come here.
Here it is. Esmeralda, I said, feeling awkward.
I scanned the room for familiar faces, hoping not to find any, but I was the only customer. I'd never been to a psychic. I felt ridiculous. But Josh said I had to see this psychic because she wasn't just any psychic. The man nodded.
Good, good, he said. A broad, eager smile spread across his face, revealing a missing front tooth.
Plus, I admit, after hearing Josh's story, I was curious about this place. And then, of course, today was the anniversary of...
Esmeralda is very good,
the man said, interrupting my thoughts. He stood about as tall as my chest, barely tall enough to see over the cash register. His head bobbed around as he spoke. I nodded, but I had to laugh at his enthusiasm.
Yeah, that's what my buddy said.
The man glanced at the clock.
Esmeralda can see you in 20 minutes.
I shrugged.
Sure, why not? Good, good.
He smiled. After I paid, he gestured towards the empty burgundy chairs in the waiting area.
Please, have a seat.
As I searched the crowdless room, I couldn't help but wonder, if this lady is such a master, why doesn't she have more customers? You'd think she'd have a longer wait list. After what seemed like an eternity, the burgundy curtain parted, and a short, portly woman in her mid to late 50s appeared. She wore a long burgundy gown, and her long gray hair was swept into a messy chignon, secured to the top of her head with a pencil. Every finger on both hands glittered with jewels. She smiled when she saw me.
You must be Nick, she said, her voice warm.
Wait, I thought. I didn't tell anyone my name, did I? She motioned towards me. I followed her past the curtain down the hall to her reading room, then gasped.
Wow, I thought, grimacing at the explosion of kitchen decor. It was an interior designer's nightmare. Red gypsy Tiffany lamps stood on the side table next to a splayed deck of tarot cards, glittering candles and crystals, red-headed Hummel figurines, and other knick-knacks. The room looked like a Christmas display gone awry, as though a drunk, angry reindeer had thrown up. I sat at the large round table, where a candelabra stood in the center, surrounded by smaller gold and red candles. Esmeralda took the seat across the table and gazed at me, her blue eyes soft and maternal.
"Now, tell me what kind of reading you would like," she said.
She must have sensed this was all new to me, because she chuckled at my expression.
"Let me explain," she said. "I do tarot readings, where I read cards that tell you about a life problem, and I do palm readings, and medium readings, where I summon the deceased who speak through me. That's the simple answer."
"So, during medium readings, can you summon anyone?" She nodded.
"Pretty much," she said. "Unless they don't want to talk. That has happened, but not often."
She studied my reaction, then flashed a knowing smile.
"That's the one you want, isn't it?"
she asked, her voice gentle. She paused, shuffling a deck of cards. Then,
"Is your loss recent?"
My stomach fluttered. Was it that obvious?
"It isn't that recent," I said,
avoiding her gaze. She set aside the tarot cards she had been shuffling and reached for my hands, taking me by surprise. Her hands were warm and maternal. A strange energy coursed through my hands as she held them.
"I want you to know that your mother is okay," she said.
The threat of tears burned in my eyes, but I fought them back. I wasn't going to be that guy.
"Today is a special day, isn't it?" she said.
But she already seems to know the answer. I nodded. "Today is the first anniversary of her death," I said, looking down at the worn red carpet. She nodded, sympathetically.
"Here's what we do, Nick," she said. "I light a candle, and you close your eyes. I guide you through a meditation, and then we ask your mother to join us. All you have to do is follow my instructions, and tell me what images come up for you throughout the meditation, okay?"
"Okay."
"But before we start, there are three things you should know. One, always keep your eyes closed unless I tell you otherwise. Two, if you feel overwhelmed, tell me and we'll stop. And three is the hardest, but you should know."
"What is it?"
"Sometimes they change," she said.
"What do you mean?"
She shrugged. "Just like we grow and change, well, our deceased loved ones do too. Usually, it isn't a dramatic change, but you should be prepared."
The thought concerned me, but it didn't sound like I needed to worry too much, did I? Before I could think about it, she continued. She smiled.
"Ready?"
I nodded. "Let's do this."
"Remember," she said, "keep your eyes closed."
I didn't bother to ask why.
"Just follow my voice."
I settled into my seat.
"Close your eyes," she said,
her voice gentle like the spring wind. I obeyed and listened. A match sounded, and the scent of lavender filled the room. Lights, invigorating. Relaxing. A click sounded from across the table. Then a soundtrack played at low volume. Ambient nature sounds, with rushing waterfalls and rhythmic chanting. It was just loud enough.
Breathe in, she said, her voice slow and soft. And breathe out. I inhaled, then exhaled. Again, breathe in and out. I relaxed, melting into the sound of her voice. Let the images come, she said. And they did. Imagine you are traveling through a tunnel, a long, dark tunnel with a soft white light all the way down at the end. This tunnel is taking you back in time. Back in time. My body relaxed, growing heavier with each breath. I breathed again, deeper and deeper. I followed the tunnel towards the light, going back and farther back in time. Then the house appeared. Where are you now, Nick?
At my parents' house, I said. I described their white stone house with ivy climbing up the walls and the greenhouse in the backyard.
Tell me about the greenhouse.
I described each item as it surfaced. It's all glass, filled with plants, and tons of ivy. And inside the greenhouse, a shovel is propped against the wall. I see it when I walk inside.
Good, Nick, she said, reassuring me. Now, what else?
At first, it doesn't look like anyone's there, I said, seeing snapshots of that day again in my mind, stunned by the clarity of the images. The detail was so vivid, so crisp. Then I see my mom's purse on the ground. It tipped over, with all her belongings spilling out. I call her name, but nothing. Then...
Then what, Nick?
I hear someone groan from the back of the greenhouse, I said. I don't see anyone around, but I hurry toward the sound, following it, calling for her. Mom? Mom? But nothing.
And what happens next?
Then I find her in the back, curled up on the ground. She's clutching her chest, but can't speak. I panic, breathless. I grab my phone and dial 911.
Then what, Nick?
I can't keep her awake. My voice broke. I paused. I try to, but at the time the ambulance comes, I could have...
No, Nick,
Esmeralda said, reassuring me before I'd even finished my sentence.
You couldn't have done more than you did. It was her time, you see.
The hot sting of tears returned, but I fought them back and kept breathing.
But she is with you, Nick, Esmeralda said. And she is here now. She says she wants to speak to you. Is that okay?
I nodded.
Okay, Nick, Esmeralda said. Keep your eyes closed as I perform this next step.
I nodded again. Something rustled, then the scene of jasmine. Then the scent of jasmine wafted through the room. Esmeralda hummed and chanted. I waited.
Barbara May, she said. We ask you to join us, Barbara May. Your son, Nick, has asked you to join us today. Speak through me. Barbara May,
she said, conjuring her spirit like a magician. I listened with my eyes shut. Never mind that I hadn't told her my mother's name, or even my name for that matter. At this point, I no longer cared how she knew the things she did. As I waited, the energy in the room shifted. A chill pierced the air. I shivered. When Esmeralda spoke, I froze. Instinctively, I knew Esmeralda wasn't the one speaking anymore. Esmeralda was gone.
Nick,
the voice said, her voice soft and careful, as though trying not to frighten me. I know that voice. I had always known that voice. It was the first voice I had ever heard. A whirlwind of emotion tumbled through me.
Mom.
I kept my eyes shut, just as Esmeralda had instructed, and I waited.
It's me, Nick, she said.
I wanted to open my eyes, but a part of me was too afraid of what I might see.
Nick, she said, her voice dropping to a whisper. I've missed you, sweetheart.
My eyes burned again, but I fought hard, holding back.
Why did you leave, Mom?
I asked, forcing back the emotion. She sighed.
I didn't want to go, Nick. Believe me, I didn't.
Then why? I started, but knew the question was of no use.
Listen, she said,
her voice sounding firmer, more insistent.
I need to tell you something while I'm here.
What is it? She sighed again, as though contemplating whether to tell me something. As I waited, my heart fluttered in my chest.
Honey,
she said, sounding nervous.
What is it? I asked. Is something wrong?
This is ridiculous, I thought. Why can't I open my eyes? But I promised Esmeralda.
Nick, she said. I'm not happy here.
Something in her voice. It didn't sound right.
What do you mean?
I asked, my anxiety growing. Something didn't feel right. I tried to ignore it.
This place, she said,
the pitch of her voice rising.
Oh, Nick. It's so dark.
Her voice lowered, then deepened.
It's so dark here, Nick.
Chills swept over me. Goose pimples raced up my spine like electric tickles. This didn't sound like my mother anymore. This couldn't be my mother. Then I remembered Esmeralda's warning. Sometimes they change.
I've done a bad thing, Nick, she said,
an ominous tone leaking from her voice, as though she was harboring a secret.
What? What are you talking about, Mom?
I asked, even though I wasn't sure this was my mother.
I've done a terrible thing, Nick,
she continued, sounding agitated.
What did you do, Mom?
I asked, not wanting to know.
Just know that I did it out of love,
she said.
He had nothing left to live for.
But I could hear the lie in her voice.
I couldn't stand the loneliness, she said.
Her voice thick with desperation.
I found a pickaxe and...
No, I shouted, but she wouldn't stop.
I had to, Nick,
she said.
I was so alone.
What did you do, Mom? I asked, my heart racing and thumping like a juiced-up gymnast in my chest.
What did you do? I didn't want to hurt.
She tried to sound apologetic. Then her voice trailed off. My stomach churned.
Esmeralda,
I begged.
I need you to come back now.
But nothing.
Esmeralda,
I shouted. I couldn't take it anymore. I needed to open my eyes. But what would I see if I did? But my mother kept speaking.
Nick, I have 3 warnings I must give you before I leave,
she said, sounding unfazed by my terror.
I don't want to know,
I pressed my hands against my ears to tune her out, but couldn't. She spoke louder, sounding more authoritative.
"One," she said. "The body is burned behind the garage. Look for the fresh mound of dirt."
"No," I shouted, sobbing, imagining my poor father.
"Two,"
she continued, her voice unwavering and merciless.
"Don't climb on rooftops or you'll get hurt."
"Stop," I shouted. What was she talking about?
"And three," she said, ignoring my protests. "I'm sorry, Nick, but a much, much worse fate awaits you."
That was it. I couldn't resist it any longer. I had to look. Without a second thought, I opened my eyes. But I wasn't prepared for what I saw. Standing in front of me, in all her dead glory, was my mother. But not the mother I had loved and remembered. This mother was gray-skinned and wild-eyed, her once blue eyes cold and steely, her cheeks gaunt, her eyes sunken. Her once silky blonde hair was coiled into a gnarly gray mess. She stared at me, unblinking, like a grotesque statue. In her eyes, I saw the absence of everything that should have been in a mother's gaze.
"Esmeralda," I shouted, "come back. I want this to end now."
But my mother kept talking, as though she hadn't heard me.
"I'm sorry it has to end this way for you, Nick."
"End how?" I asked, not wanting to know, but needing to know. But with that, the room went dark, and the candle flame blew out, as though extinguished by some phantom breath. A moment later, the light flipped back on, and Esmeralda stood in front of me, calm and serene, as though she hadn't heard or seen a thing.
"What was that?" I asked. "What happens to my mother?"
Esmeralda shook her head.
"Sometimes they change."
As I drove home after the reading, I crept down the freeway at the speed of a geriatric heading to a bingo game after church. I was too afraid of what might happen. The speed limit was 60. I drove 35. I ignored the many people who honked at me and gave me the finger. When I got home, I texted my dad, but never heard back. I was too afraid to go to his house, even though I wanted to. I tried to convince myself that my psychic reading had all been some elaborate mind trick or a prank. The next morning, I called Josh, but he didn't answer. Minutes later, I got a call from an unknown number. The deep voice of a stranger replied on the other end.
"Nick May?"
he asked.
"Yeah?"
"Afraid I got some bad news."
What?
"Is your father Jerome May?"
Yes, I said, feeling sick with anticipation.
"I'm afraid he's had an accident. Fell off the roof during home repairs. Happened about an hour ago."
"Wait, what?" "Then who was buried behind the garage?" I wondered.
"What the hell? What happened?"
"A neighbor reported a strange noise coming from your father's home,"
he said.
"Said he heard a man scream. After he called the station, we sent law enforcement to the scene. When the officer stepped out of the vehicle, he heard the voice of an older, unidentified male subject calling from a bush on the property. He headed towards the sound and found your father incapacitated."
"Incapacitated?" I asked, confused.
"Yeah, a broken arm,"
he said.
"Might want to head down to the hospital for a visit."
"Is he going to survive?" I asked.
"Probably."
As I dressed to go to the hospital, I flipped on the TV and listened to the news. A breaking news story interrupted the usual morning program.
Breaking news,
a news anchor said.
This just in. Around 5 o'clock this morning, police responded to an anonymous tip that a body had been buried in the backyard of a home in the quiet Dover Hills neighborhood, located on the southeast corner of Hammond Street and Trinity Avenue. Once on scene, police discovered the body of this 20-something male buried in a shallow grave.
When the picture appeared on the screen, I dropped my coffee. Josh. The anchorman continued.
The man has since been identified as 25-year-old Joshua Williams.
But I didn't hear the rest. I thought back to last night. 2 out of the 3 warnings had already come true. I grew restless as I replayed my mother's words. A much, much worse fate awaits you. Now I can't help but wonder what happens next. Last year, during the middle of April, myself and 2 of my closest friends decided that we were due for an escape from our usual repetitive lives of going to work, coming home to play video games with each other, and repeating the cycle. And so, we all decided we would rent a property in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan for a few days and enjoy ourselves in a different setting. After seeing our options, we settled on a chalet, a cabin-like house with 3 stories and 2 balconies with a huge triangular roof located deep in the woods of the UP. On our way there, we enjoyed beautiful scenery that none of us had ever been exposed to before. Marshlands, mountains, and waterfalls could all be seen out of our windows during the excruciating drive that, by the end, had my legs begging to be stretched from staying in the same position for 10 hours. As we got closer to the chalet, we noticed that the small cities that we passed were becoming more scarce until, eventually, there was nothing but a dirt road and deep woods on both sides of it. That dirt road led to a smaller, slightly drier road, and we passed several chalets until we found ours amongst the rest in the area. The chalets were built in proximity to each other to accommodate people who wanted to come and enjoy the sky-high ski resort, a massive mountain that the balcony of the chalets had an excellent view of. Upon seeing that we had neighbors, we were a little put off. After all, we wanted something new, and neighbors were all too familiar to us. But we decided it wasn't a deal-breaker, considering the chalets were about 50 feet apart from each other, a direct contrast to the cramped housing projects that we all hailed from. Plus, judging from the lack of cars in the lots of the other chalets, it was safe to assume that they were not being occupied at the moment, which would make sense because of the absence of snow, making the ski hill useless. We stepped out of the car, and my legs thanked me before I approached the chalet and stared in awe at the most luxurious place I had ever had the privilege of staying at. As we were in the middle of unloading our luggage from the car, we noticed the sound of a different car's engine approaching. We watched as a black Dodge Challenger with purple stripes pulled into the lot of the chalet across from ours, and 3 girls stepped out of the car. They were all wearing only black, 2 of them having the matching raven hair to complement their apparel, while the driver had bright blonde hair that went down to her waist. Internet culture made sure that we knew very well what we were looking at. A group of goth girls that appeared to walk straight out of 2002 into 2021. Presumably here to enjoy some time away, just as we were. My friend, Caesar, was always jumping at any opportunity to pork whenever the opposite sex was close enough to yell to, and so he had predictably started yelling across the road to the girls.
Hey, what are you girls looking to get into tonight?
At the sound of his sexually inquisitorial screech, all 3 of them paused from grabbing their things from their car to bring inside and their necks snapped in our direction in unison. They gave us all a brief, malevolent stare before I saw the blonde one give a smirk to the other two, then continue on carrying things inside of their chalet. Caesar interpreted the smirk as good news, letting me and my other friends Tyrese know that tonight it was game time. And judging from his smile, we could conclude that he wasn't referring to playing Smash Bros. With us later on. We should have left at that second, but none of us knew exactly how much trouble we were sinking into, and so we stayed. The girls across the street took a considerably longer time to unpack their car, and I couldn't help but notice that it wasn't just usual luggage that they were unloading, but full computer setups, including monitors, cables, computer towers, and routers. Now, goth girls I could have left alone, but goth girls carrying gaming equipment I took as a direct order from God to look my best and prepare to settle down for a life of marriage and plenty of children. My obsession with goth girls probably stemmed back to the cartoons I was watching as a kid, such as Teen Titans and Scooby-Doo, and their beautiful portrayals of what at the time were considered to be what we know now as goth girls. My obsession with video games goes way back before that, though. My mother told me that when I was still in diapers, I would play Mortal Kombat on my PS2 while doing a headstand in our living room couch for hours on end until she had to cut me off for my own good. These two qualities combined completely overlapped my fear of talking to women, and so I decided to approach them and ask if they needed help carrying things in. After all, the chances were slim to none that an opportunity like this would present itself again in the near future. And with that thought, I walked towards them. "Hey, I couldn't help but notice that you had a Leon Lee full of hardware. Those things are heavy. Do you girls need a hand?" The two black-haired girls paid no attention at all to what I had said and continued to lug bags inside, and the blonde-haired girl, which at that point I had concluded was the leader amongst the three, had assessed me from toes to head, giggled, and turned away from me. I had little time to feel humiliated as I watched her pick up a huge computer case that weighed at least 80 pounds with what looked like little to no effort at all with one arm, and carry it into their chalet. Now, I'm not saying that girls can't be strong, but this was something unnatural. Me and my friends have been building gaming computers for a few years now, and it's always taken our entire reserve of strength to pick up a fully assembled computer, and this one looked bigger than any other computer that I had ever set hands on. After processing what I had just seen, I went back to my friends who were just finishing bringing our stuff inside. When I got back to our car, Tyrese asked what happened while I was gone. I knew that they saw me talking to them, so I made up some lie that all I did was let them know that their gas cap was open. I didn't bother telling them about what happened, mainly because of the embarrassment I would be subjected to when Caesar interpreted the story as me being a weakling, as he usually does. I wish I would have warned them then and there to leave those girls alone, but my pride kept me from doing so, and it cost me more than I could imagine. I would come to regret that decision to this very day. We went inside, and the absolute allurement of the place made me forget about the dark superwoman that I tried to flirt with only moments ago. Before I knew it, we were all settled in, getting drunk and playing Smash Bros. On the flat screen in the living room. Eventually, we all fell into an alcohol-induced slumber on the couch. When I came to, I noticed that Caesar wasn't to my left where he had previously been. Tyrese, on the other hand, was just where I had left him, on my right side. Only now he was fully conscious, controller in hand, playing against a CPU. I asked him where Caesar had gone, and his reply gave my heart concrete shoes.
"He went across the street like 20 minutes ago to holler at those girls from earlier."
I didn't want to worry Tyrese, or myself for that matter, so I fought the urge to bolt out of the house with urgency and walked out as if I wasn't worried that my friend's life was in danger. You might think it's idiotic to sense danger from what could be just a woman that lifts, but deep down, something inside of myself told me that wherever Caesar was, he wasn't safe. Once I was out of Tyrese's view, my leisurely stroll became a light sprint as I approached the door of the chalet across the street. I heard a scream of agony as I reached the front door, which I recognized as Caesar's, only validating my suspicions further. I went to reach for the doorknob when, before my hand could make contact, it was accessed from the other side. I rushed to the side of the chalet just in time to watch as all three of the girls walked out with no clue that I was standing where they were just seconds before. I peeked around the corner in suspense, trying to hold my breath as best I could as they ambled towards our chalet where Tyrese was. Right then, I was faced with a dilemma. I knew that Tyrese wasn't safe. I also knew that Caesar was worse than vulnerable. With that thought in the back of my mind, I went inside of the chalet once the girls were far enough that they wouldn't hear me. Upon entering the girls' chalet, I was beyond surprised to see that the inside looked nothing like the outside would suggest. The walls were decorated with Gothic paintings that looked like images that would be included in the Bible if it were a picture book. The windows, which couldn't be seen from the front of the chalet, were all composed of stained glass, resembling an old Catholic cathedral. The place was creepy for sure, though I couldn't help but acknowledge the obvious beauty of it. I couldn't forget my mission, and the lack of any additional anguished screams drove me to believe the worst had already happened to Caesar. I started searching the many rooms of the chalet. To give a comparison, the rooms of our chalet were essentially nothing rooms with pictures of generic catchphrases on the walls, such as live, laugh, love, and other things of that nature to fit any person that may rent it. The rooms of the girls' chalet, however, were all designed with the same theme, which was goth. Black bedsheets and similar paintings that I saw on the walls in the entrance, with a few rooms having small statues of dragons on the nightstand. With the first few rooms having no sign of Caesar, I began to lose hope, until I noticed a light emanating out of the last room I had yet to check. Without haste, I ran to it. When I looked inside, I found Caesar, but not in the state I wanted to find him. He was on the floor, clearly dead, presumably freshly killed as a stream of blood still ran from the corner of his mouth. His neck was impaled all the way through the side with a ritualistic dagger. The aforementioned light was coming from a flat-screen TV on the wall, which displayed the victory screen of the game NBA 2K21, Caesar's favorite game. Three avatars resembling the three goth girls to a T were performing a choreographed victory dance in a loop, while a popular rap song played in the background. Before I could comprehend what any of it meant, I heard the front door open, accommodated by the screams of Tyrese. The screams went from being 100 feet away to being in the doorway of the room within a matter of 3 seconds. When I turned around, my eyes met the leader's, her pawns behind her, restraining Tyrese with his arms twisted behind his back in what looked like a painful way.
"Looks like this one walked right in on his own. How convenient," she said to the others with a sinister grin.
"What do you want from us? Some sort of sick ritual you need sacrifices for," said Tyrese, after noticing Caesar's lifeless body on the floor. The leader responded,
"No, you idiot. We want to play video games just like you morons."
She then slammed Caesar's body into the corner with one swift kick before demanding us to take a seat where our best friend had died moments prior. The warm pool of blood seeping through our pants as we were both given GameCube controllers. Tyrese and I watched in horror
as the girls disconnected the Xbox that was hooked up to the flat screen and plugged in a Nintendo Switch with a custom gothic decal. It was at this point that I realized what had happened to Caesar. They must have played against each other before he lost against them and was stabbed through the neck for it. And the same was probably going to happen to Tyrese and I. I didn't know if Tyrese had met the same realization, but he started sobbing uncontrollably. Super Smash Bros. Ultimate booted up on the flat screen as I tried to snap Tyrese out of it. But it was no use. I could see that he had zero hope of surviving, which was really bad news for me, because Tyrese was better at the game than I was, and if I wanted to win, I would need his help. The two raven-haired girls stood directly behind us with controllers in their hands, their faces littered with confidence. At the character selection screen, Tyrese leaned to me and said,
"I can't play, man. I can barely breathe right now."
"You have to try your best, or we're going to be killed like Caesar was," I replied. This only seemed to break his soul more, and his reaction of sobbing deeper only made me regret saying it. The girls both picked Bayonetta, predictably, while Tyrese and I both chose our respective mains, Pikachu and Lucario, a duo that was usually near impossible to defeat, but with the situation beginning as it was, my doubts were through the roof. The game started with a go, and the girls began applying pressure right away. It only took a few moments to see that they weren't amateurs. Rather, they played like the professionals that we watched on Twitch from time to time. The two Bayonettas jumped straight over my character and began teaming on Tyrese's, delivering combo after combo until he was pushed off the stage. It was apparent that he really had no capability of playing the game in the state he was in. As Lucario plunged into the abyss and the audio cue, "Lucario defeated," played, I heard the leader pull the blade from Caesar's neck, walk to Tyrese, and give him the same treatment. His sobbing turned into a blood-curdling gurgle as the life left his body, and he fell to the floor, dead. This made the two girls playing erupt in hysterical laughter as their characters turned around to face mine. I started to feel the same way that Tyrese had felt. My hands started to shake, and my chest was beginning to restrict airflow. Just then, when I had lost 99% of my hope, the Smash Ball spawned. To me, this was a sign that I could get out of here alive. That thought fired me up, and I jumped into action, hitting both of them with a hard-to-hit combo that Tyrese had taught me just days before. This seemed to make them play more seriously, focusing their attention on the game ender, the Smash Ball floating around the screen. I waited on one end of the stage as the two Bayonettas rushed to the small ball, hitting it with strikes and visually becoming more angry every time a hit didn't break it. Eventually, one of them hit the ball towards my direction, and when I broke it with a single tap, I could hear both of them inhale dramatically at the same time. I immediately activated my final smash attack when they were both in range, and when they were caught inside of it, they started to panic. One dropped the controller she was holding, and the other chucked hers straight through the wall of the chalet room, clearing a hole that made our chalet across the street visible. They both started rambling as they got closer to their fate.
"Why did you let him get the Smash Ball?"
The other girl replied,
"It's too late, Baker. I'll see you in hell, sisters."
I didn't know what to think would happen next, but what happened, I certainly would have never expected. The two girls began to be eviscerated, layer by layer. First, their skin melted away, and next was the muscle tissue that dissolved into nothing. "Of course they would mess up that big," said the leader, as the girls' bones disappeared into thin air, and their clothes dropped into a pile on the floor. My heart felt as if it would beat straight out of my chest as I sat there, covered in the blood of my friends with a newfound respect for the Smash Ball.
A moment of silence passed before the leader spoke.
Honestly, just get the hell out of here before I forget the rules and rip your head off out of spite.
She then lifted the dagger out of Tyrese's neck, pointed it towards the ceiling, and started to recite what sounded like some spell. When she finished, the bodies of my friends, along with the blood trails that they left behind, and the clothes of the disintegrated goth girls, had all been swallowed into a purple and black portal, before closing in on itself and vanishing. I took her command and ran directly out of the room, up the hallway and out of the chalet, before jumping into Caesar's car and heading far away from that place. I had no interest in packing anything that was left inside our chalet, and I definitely wasn't going to spend any unnecessary time close to that woman. I didn't bother calling the police. After witnessing all the evidence being sucked into a black hole, there really was no point. During the drive home, I fabricated a story in my head of how we all went hiking when we ran into a group of black bears who ripped Tyrese and Caesar to shreds. I tried to make them seem as heroic as possible to their families, adding that I wouldn't have escaped without them being so selfless. I know that both of their families believe that I killed them, and that their bodies are somewhere in the UP, but that's not the truth. I wish I could tell them the truth. I wish it was that simple, but where would I even start? Oh, hey, by the way, your son lost in a video game against a demon with human skin and had to pay the price of getting shanked in the throat before being sucked into oblivion. It would only make me look more like a murderer, desperate to cover up his acts. I haven't played a video game since then, and I sold my computer when I got home, along with anything else that would remind me of my late friends. I don't sleep the same way anymore. The same dream haunts me every time I fall asleep. Tyrese's gurgling playing at maximum volume as the laughter from the girls can be heard from somewhere distant, and all that can be seen is the face of the leader smirking in satisfaction, her black lipstick staying ingrained in my eyes even after waking up. I say this in hopes that I will help someone. If you visit the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, please avoid any signs of the supernatural. If you notice something, don't be afraid to leave right away. And please, people, protect your friends at all costs.
Are you looking for a Columbus car dealership built on tradition and trust? Buyers Auto, family-owned since 1897, offers top new and pre-owned vehicles. Visit us or shop online at buyersauto.com. Buyers Auto, driving the next generation of buyers.